Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a blackjack player who posts on the forums under the name of The Doc. Doc, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
How did you get the name The Doc?
Well, so that relates to my day job. I'm currently a vice chair of surgery and professor of surgery at a major medical school. I serve on several national surgical organizations. I've written about 70 articles on surgical topics and written about 11 book chapters, and teach medical students and residents every day and operate almost every day. So blackjack for me has been a very enjoyable side business, but it's certainly not my day job. And then the doc was just a handle I adopted on the forums, and I've maintained that over the last 20 years.
You know, none of the doctors in Grey's Anatomy are out counting cards, so clearly it's not an accurate depiction.
Yeah, their lives are plenty interesting without the casino play.
Right.
But since you have such a drab, dreary life, you have to go into the casinos.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so how did you get started playing advantageously?
So, you know, I never really had an interest in casino play. My wife and I honeymooned in the mid-90s in Aruba, and I remember before dinner I took $20 down to a casino and lost it in about 2 minutes at a $5 blackjack game, and I just concluded that was for suckers, and I wasn't going to get involved in that again. And then the year that I finished my residency, I went to Vegas for a conference, and I went out there with my new partner. I was in a private practice initially, and my partner was a complete degenerate, sloppy gambler who played every game in the casino and all of them poorly. And if he hears this, he's going to be upset, but he can't deny it. But anyway, so I get there 36 hours after he had gotten there. He'd been up for three straight days, and I think he ate like a hot dog in the whole 3 days, and he was down several thousand dollars and hadn't slept. I don't even think he checked into his room. But while I was out there, you know, I only had a few hundred dollars to spend because I still wasn't making any money. I was finishing up my residency. I got fascinated with the mathematics of blackjack, and it was a series of dependent trials. So on the plane home, I bought a copy of Beat the Dealer, which, you know, was an antiquated reference for blackjack, but it sort of acquainted me with the effects of card removal and how bet variation could allow you to beat the dealer. And it wasn't a practical guide, but I knew that those references were out there. So after that, I started, you know, reading more. I bought Lance Humble's book. I bought Don's book, Blackjack Attack. I bought Professional Blackjack, Black Belt and Blackjack, and basically just read everything I could get my hands on. And then after that, sort of made a foray into initially just perfect basic strategy and then betting a little bit with the running count, then adjusting to the true count, then adding indices. And I was maintained redshift play status until I could demonstrate that I was a winning player, and then kind of took it up from there.
So you... You were early to the internet. The first forums, Wong's forum, and Arnold had a forum back in the 90s. And you were an early adapter.
Yeah. So my first handle were my initials. So obviously I decided that wasn't the best handle to have. I think the first time that I signed on to the forum was probably in the year maybe 99. That would have been shortly after the forums got started. They were much more robust back then. There was a lot of really good discussion, and there's still a lot in the archives, but really the traffic of useful information on the forums has really dried up.
Yeah, yep. Although, are you on the Discord channel?
No.
Okay, because, you know, it seems like now the discussion has moved to the Discord channel. You know, although there's a lot of, just sort of chatter, you know, unimportant chatter, although there was always that on the forums as well. But there are kind of levels. The way Wong used to have, you know, the free forum and then the green chip,
right.
And it's, at one point he also had black chip,
and so
the Discord is kind of like that too. So, you know, you just like on the forums, you learn pretty quickly who you want to pay attention to and who you don't, and but there's good information being exchanged out there still.
And I still get a good exchange of information. It's just almost always through private mail. You know, like someone respond to a post and they'll email me privately. And I think that's a good way to do it because you can share information without killing plays and killing games.
Yeah.
Like when I was pretty early in this, I asked a question about tracking and I got about 14 private mail saying, please bust your post. So, you know, I did.
Yeah. Well, back then, you know, there were still a lot of trackable games around.
Yes.
So perhaps the casinos heard the old maxim that you should never play cards with a man named Doc. So you must have been backed off playing blackjack. So what early backoffs were memorable?
Well, so first of all, you know, when I got into this, I really had this illusion in my mind that the casinos, you know, only backed off huge winners, and the stakes that I was playing, which at that point were green chips, were of no threat to any Vegas strip casino. So I found that was quickly found out that was not the case. My first back off, like everyone's first back off, was at the Barbary Coast. I was in there playing with my wife. We played for about 10 minutes. And I think my bet went from 25 to 75. And they pushed it out of the bet circle and barred me. And then they barred my wife. She's a civilian, 100%. And they barred my two friends who were playing craps. And they revoked my coffee shop account. So that was my introduction to getting backed off. And then my next back off, and this one hurt, was at Treasure Island. I mean, I had been playing rated there and, you know, had built my status up to where I was, you know, comped and had room, food, and beverage and had a nice relationship with my host. And once again, I didn't feel bad about playing rated because I didn't think a spread of 25 to 175 was a huge threat to the casino, and 25 to 175 at this time in Vegas was still, you know, a bet amount that would get you comped at a smaller property like Treasure Island. Well, you know, once again, everybody at the place knew I wasn't a pro. They knew I was a physician, and they solicited medical advice from me, and, you know, and you can't fake that stuff. But when it came down to it, I mean, that call comes from upstairs. So I'm very jaded when people talk about their act. I think you can look like a counter, but I think whether you look like a counter or not, if your play is distinguished as advantage, they're going to back you off.
Even if it's not. If you just win too much, they're going to back you off, you know.
True. Oh, yeah, and even if you don't win too much. I mean, I got backed off at the win when I was down low five figures. It was just one of those days where I could not get a card to fall right. And I had two max bets out, and the pits standing there fanning through the discards. So I know that they've been watching me, even though I've not been winning. And I had two max bets out. The dealer got an ace up. It's like a true five. And I get dealt a hard 12 and a hard 13. So I'm looking at two max bets. The pit's right there. And I'm not about to lose the money. So I take insurance. The dealer's got blackjack, and they back me off, stuck, you know, low five figures.
Yeah, I recently saw an OSN alert about a card counter was spreading 5 to 30. And yeah, I get people who say to me often, oh, well, they won't care about me because I'm betting so low. Yes, they will. They will bar you no matter how low you bet if they think you're playing with an edge. So, you were never in danger of not having your rent money because you kept your day job through all of this. But how did your wife react to all this?
Well, my wife loves advantage play. She just hates variance. That's the
point.
So, you know, fortunately, early in my career, I was on the right side of variance. So I had some pretty impressive wins. And because my day job was really even more lucrative then than it is now, because I was in private practice, which is more entrepreneurial, you know, I could bet fairly high stakes. And because I was on the right side of variance, I mean, she was very enthusiastic about it. You know, variance catches up to you, and I've had some pretty stellar losses. I think I'm probably about at EV, you know, for a career, which is where I think we all hope to be. And she's more understanding of it now. I mean, she knows that there is an element of risk to it, but that you're playing for the long run, and she's a believer. I mean, she's seen it work, so not that she's thrilled about a loss, but she gets it. And, you know, I've tried to learn, because, you know, she's great cover, but but she has never really expressed the metal that it takes to shove it out there, you know.
Yeah. But if you were to retire from medicine and play full time, you have enough of a track record where she'd still be on board?
Right. We've discussed this. What I told her was basically where now I don't really have a defined bankroll. We kind of just roll it into our personal, you know, net worth. And then I'll take some and play and put it back in, just because it's a replenishable bankroll. And I sort of define a trip bankroll and set stakes according to that, for example. You know, if I was going to do this full time as an AP, I would want to start accumulating a designated bankroll that when I retire from medicine, that is my working bankroll. That's what I'm going to size my bets according to, and then grow that over time. And if nothing else, you know, just generate enough EV to keep you out of your retirement savings and just, you know, pay your day-to-day expenses. I think that'd just be a great way to, you know, to enjoy your post-retirement years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they say the best jobs are the ones that, you know, your hobbies become your occupation, or the things you love to do or the things you go do every day. I mean, I love medicine, but medicine is extremely stressful. And, you know, blackjack, for as stressful it is sometimes to go through a long losing streak or something, it's still very enjoyable for me to play. I still enjoy trying to learn as much as I can and, you know, expand my repertoire of advantage plays, and to be able to do that full time is certainly a lifetime goal for me after I leave medicine.
Not counting being backed off at the Barbary Coast, which doesn't really count. Your first back off was Treasure Island, and that at that time they were a part of the Mirage family, which would include Mirage, and I don't know if Bellagio was open yet when this happened. And when you backed off at Treasure Island, were you still able to play at Mirage and Bellagio, Golden Nugget?
Strangely, yes. I mean, I didn't have any issues at Mirage or Bellagio for some time. Now, that changed. I ended up getting a pretty unusual back off at Bellagio later, and I got backed off at Mirage even after that, after a huge win. I won like $34,000 at a $300 minimum double deck game. Of course, I mean, it was stupid to camp out at a double deck game, but you know, I felt like I was burned already at Bellagio and Treasure Island, so Mirage was coming. But the back off of Bellagio was exceptionally interesting because, you know, once again, they were letting me play, and they knew I was a doctor and a surgeon. And once again, every time I sat down to play, they would chat me up with medical questions and questions about the career, which I certainly didn't mind. And being able to answer those questions while you're keeping the count, I thought was a good cover. Once again, I'm pretty jaded about cover. And one day one of the pit guys asked me if I could help out one of the dealers whose boyfriend had a hernia and didn't have insurance. And what could I do about that? Well, I mean, obviously I couldn't fix it. I didn't practice in Nevada. But I arranged for him to go to a clinic in Canada, which has an international reputation for quality hernia repair, and it's very economical. So I left Bellagio, came back about 3 months later for one of my pilgrimages to Vegas. And when I came back to the pit, I was greeted by two people. I was greeted by the pit boss, who thanked me, said the surgery had gone well and he was doing fine, and they did get a good deal on it, and by the shift boss, who backed me off.
Wow.
Yeah. So, once again, for all you out there who put a lot into your act, I mean, I was hiding in plain sight and it got me nowhere. So.
Yeah. So, how many hours a year do you put in?
You know, it varies with the demands of work, but I would say on average about 200. You know, I do have a store close to home that's easy for me to get 4 to 8 hours a week in, not every week, but, you know, if I just did 4 hours, you know, a week, that would give me 200 hours. In addition, I make 2 to 3 trips to Vegas a year, and then a lot of the work-related travel that I do will take me to different gambling destinations. For example, I serve as a consultant on one national surgical organization that's based in Pennsylvania. And the Pennsylvania blackjack games are outstanding. So I try to get up there as much as possible. And, you know, I don't know how much you guys know about the Pennsylvania games, but all the rules in Pennsylvania are standardized across the entire state. And they're all stand on soft 17 late surrender games. So there's really no variability from casino to casino, except maybe a little bit with respect to penetration. So you can get basically the same game anywhere you go. And where I'm only there once every couple of months max, heat has not been an issue because I'm not camping out.
And do you base the size of your betting on the current casino you're playing, or because you mentioned you just have a replenishable bankroll, so or do you just have a max bet you're comfortable with, or how do you approach that issue?
So I think in Vegas it's more I'm going to push the limits a little more, obviously. I really tone it down a little bit close to home because I don't want to burn the game out, you know, here locally. And when I travel, I try to set the bet basically just so it doesn't stand out.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, as some people have said, you know, a bet of $500 is more notorious than a bet of $2,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
don't understand.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't understand what you said about the 500 versus 2,000.
Well, Richard has talked about this before. It just seems like there's a bet range somewhere maybe between $500 and $1,000 that really seems to draw the pit's attention. And above that, it just seems like you become a high roller and it's not as big of a deal. It doesn't make any sense to me, but it's something that I've observed. Would you?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, I agree, and I have heard that reiterated by a number of people. They find that the more you bet, the heat actually goes down. Now, part of that may be because they become intimidated by you, the player, because if they get it wrong when they bar a guy who bets $5,000 a hand, it's a serious thing. But you know, nobody's going to take any flack for barring somebody who bets 500 or 1,000.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I hadn't thought about it that way. But the bet sizing, you know, too, depends a lot with how much, you know, money I brought with me. I think that I'm willing to overbet my bankroll a little bit because I'm willing to accept a little bit higher risk of ruin because I have a replenishable bankroll, but I also don't, you know, want to go broke on a trip. So I think in general, I bet a lot smaller than I used to. There's some reasons for that we can talk about, but, you know, psychologically, I seem to do better and play better if I tone it down a little bit over what I did when my wife and I we had no kids and we were making money hand over fist. And, you know, now ever since I've had kids, it's a little bit more difficult for me emotionally to disconnect from the game. and play super high stakes because, you know, I'm thinking to myself, there's a year of college on the felt right now. And it's just, it's affected me. I mean, I discussed it with a big player at a green chip party a few years ago. And his answer was real simple. He says, lower your stakes. And so, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
And it's really been a lot more enjoyable.
Now, have you had any bad backoffs?
So, you know, for the most part, it's just been kind of the standard. I'm sorry, sir, no more blackjack. I've had a couple that have been rough and a couple that I didn't really understand. I got backed off at the Aladdin in Vegas from all the table games. So, you know, and I was straight counting. So I said, well, can I go play Baccarat? Which I wasn't going to play a negative expectation game. But I said, can I go play Baccarat? No, sir. Can I play dice? No, you can't play craps. You can play the machines. And so I don't know if they thought I was, you know, doing something else like edge sorting or something. I have no idea what they thought I was doing or if that's their policy, but they backed me off from all the table games.
Yeah. They don't know is the answer. they don't know what they're doing. So, yeah. You know, because the worst thing that can happen is they bar you for blackjack, you go over to the Baccarat table, and all of a sudden win $10,000 or $20,000, and now somebody above them is going to go, why did you let that guy play?
Well, and you've said, you know, the worst thing can happen to you is get backed off for counting when you're doing a more advanced play. Well, I was just straight counting, you know, and I didn't even really have a substantial win. I think it was like a $3,000 you know, win at a black chip table, which is by no means breaking the bank. I took a rough back off in the pre-Bob Nersessian area that I wish he'd been around at the time. But I was at the Hard Rock, and I was playing with some friends that were out there for a bachelor party. I just kind of let them do their bachelor party, and I did my gambling. So I sat down in a $200 game, and after an hour of play, I was up $300, okay? And guy comes up to the table, and honestly, I thought it was a host because the count had just been hovering around, you know, neutral. I had not made any crazy plays, nothing that I thought was a tip-off. And it was not a host. It was the shift boss, and he backed me off, and then he asked me if I was staying on the property, and I said no. And he said, well, we're just going to trespass you here. So three security guards. I'm in there in a suit. I'm, all of 5'9 and 170 pounds. Kind of drag me over to the cage, cash me out. And then as they're walking me to the door, right as we're going through the doors, they put their arms underneath my shoulders, you know, right in my both armpits, lift me up and just chuck me into the bushes.
Wow.
It was an assault, you know. And I stood up. I said, I need to get my friend out of there. You know, I didn't have my cell phone on. I said, I need to get my friends out of there. And they're like, you can go wait for them on the corner. So I had to go stand on the corner in front of Club Paradise waiting on them to come out of the Hard Rock.
Wow. Yeah. What year was that?
So that was probably maybe 2002.
Wow.
It was when it was a big property. I mean, a lot was going on, a lot of big betting.
Yeah, that would have been a good case.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, with the Caesars and the emergence of Bob Nersessian has really opened the eyes of a lot of advantage players as to what the casino can and can't do.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned being backed off from a number of Vegas casinos. In preparing for this interview, you treated me to a meal at a nice restaurant in a Vegas casino. Presumably you were RFB of some sort, perhaps not full, but some kind of it. So you only get those if you're playing rated, which is not something that people normally do if they've been backed off a lot in the area. So I don't understand how all that happened.
Okay, so yeah, so I have a strategy for that. So what I've done is basically if I've been backed off or even trespassed at a Vegas property, I will still play that property when I'm there. And the reason is because I'm not there that often. So it's usually at least, 3 to 6 months since I have been there previously. And it may have been even a year or two if I choose to just not play that particular property. So let's say I get backed off at Bellagio. Last time I was in Vegas, I played Bellagio, but I hadn't been at Bellagio in at least a year. So I play unrated, short sessions, hit and run. I don't cash out immediately. And I always make sure I'm way below any threshold that would require ID, like a CTR threshold. But to maintain the comps, to get the EV from the comps, I do a limited amount of rated play at places where I've not been backed off. And I just make sure that I play in such a manner that really doesn't draw enough attention to me to back me off, but triggers some good mailers and some good offers to bring me out.
Are you making these rated plays with negative EV,
Not negative, but I think I play more of a break-even spread than an aggressive spread.
Yeah, this is something I've advocated on the show many times. I think that's a great way to go. You can still have a small winning game and not be spreading enough for them to worry about it. And yeah, I mean, you're probably picking up $1,000 worth of comps in the weekend for your room and food, et cetera, and if you play big enough, you might even get airfare.
So I didn't get airfare, but this last time I was out, I had a food credit, suite, and 300 in promo chips, which I was able to get, 200 of actual value out of, which was nice. And then one of the other properties that I do some drop-in play, and generate two other properties where I do some drop-in play and get mailers from. One of them is notorious for putting people in OSN. So obviously that's a place where I'm going to play very conservatively. But it's a beautiful property, and they send out great mailers. So, I'm just keeping those around to make the cost of the trips lower and get to put the wife up in a nice place.
Sure.
Ah, you had your wife with you, and you're hiding her from me. My reputation must be different than I thought.
Not this particular trip. I was flying solo this particular trip, but she does like Vegas. It's just the... the kids are at such an age where they're into everything. My daughter's about to start college, and my son's, into basketball and martial arts and other things. So she had a lot of commitments and wasn't able to join me.
All right, then. If that's the way you're going to be, we're going to have some commercials. So we'll return to the dock in a few minutes. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In August, the prizes are logo merchandise advertising the South Point or the South Point 400 NASCAR race. Each week, Monday through Thursday, earn 1,300 points on any machine and get the prize, you keep the points. If you collect all four prizes, then you will get $100 in free play on Saturday, August 31st. The next 10-week semester of free video poker classes will begin the day after Labor Day, Tuesday, September 3rd, starting at noon. There are flyers available at the club with a schedule, which may also be found at bobdancer.com/seminars. All adults are welcome to come. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Magic Deal Poker. This is 10 coins per line game where periodically, prior to the deal, you receive 1, 2, or 3 Magic Deal cards. These are like wild cards, except they're determined after the other cards are dealt, and they must take the value of a real card, which means you cannot have 5 of a kind in a game like Double Double Bonus. The frequency of the Magic Deal cards depends on the game. On games where 2 pair receives even money, you get relatively few Magic Deal cards because 4 of a kind pay so much more. on games where two pair pays double money, which basically means jacks are better and bonus poker, you get significantly more magic deal cards. Okay, we're back talking to the doc about his blackjack experiences. In your notes, Doc, you told us about a man you called Mr. H, who was a big part of your gambling life for some time. Tell us about Mr. H.
Okay, so like I said, when I finished my residency, I went to work in a small town. It's my hometown. My mother wasn't healthy, so I went to sort of assist with her care. And was in a small town, small private practice. And was a gentleman in town who was a multimillionaire coal operator. I come from a state that is notorious for coal production. This is one of the top coal operators in the state. His gambling exploits were legendary. He had $1 million credit line at Caesars in the 70s. He was notorious for going on these huge gambling trips, taking a big entourage. He'd come back and, you know, one Christmas he bought, acreage and Cadillacs for all his foremen and bet $25,000 a hand in the 70s. Just a phenomenal player. Another story on him back in the 70s, he apparently would go to a coal show every year in Vegas and take a bunch of his employees with him, and he was playing baccarat, $25,000 a hand, and at a $25 table. And the reason why he was playing at a $25 table is because he wanted to be able to play with his employees. So the shift boss came in and said, well, we're going to raise the table limit to $100. And he said, well, you can't do that because these guys can't play $100. And they kicked it up a notch. You know, management held up the decision and said, no, it's a black chip table. They're either going to have to, you know, buck up more money or leave. And this is a guy betting $25,000 a hand.
So he got God.
Yeah. So he got up and checked 70 people out of the hotel. 70 people out of the hotel, went right across the street to a competing property and got his $25 game. But anyway, so he was notorious. So I had to do an emergency.
Somebody
operation.
Should get fired over that.
Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, it's just so unbelievable. I mean, and also, normally, even if you want to raise the minimum to 100,
you grandfather.
Yeah, you grandfather the people in. It's just mind-boggling how stupid that is.
Well, I'm sure some heads rolled over that. But anyway, so I had to do an emergency operation on this guy. He's a really nice guy. He had an obstructing colon cancer, so I had to have urgent surgery. He recovered very well, and he came back to see me in the office, and he said, once again, it's a small town, and things get around. So he goes, I understand you like to go to Las Vegas and play cards. And, you know, my boss likes to play cards. And I said, well, who's your boss? And he said, it's Mr. H. And he was 82 at the time, by the way. And I said, I understand how he plays cards. He goes, well, maybe you'd like to go to Atlantic City with us. We're going next weekend. Let me see if I can get you on that trip. So I got to go, and quite frankly, I had a miserable time. He was really explosive and bombastic and kind of tough to be around. You know, he was kind of a curmudgeon, you know, at 82, and was used to getting things his way. But, you know, I went, and I thought that was the end of it. But then about 3 years later, I moved into his neighborhood, and I happened to be across the street from him. And one day the phone rings, and he's like, Doc, I didn't know we were neighbors. You should have come over. I'm coming to see you. So he walks over, and he brings me a case of Johnny Walker Blue that the Trump casinos had sent him from Atlantic City. He's like, do you drink scotch? And I'm like, no. And he goes, well, give this to your friends, and they'll think you have good taste. And he's like, you got to be at the airport Friday at 2:00. We're going to Connecticut. So, I mean, every weekend that I wasn't working from then for several months, you know, to years, we would go to Atlantic City, to Vegas, to the Bahamas, to Mohegan Sun, to Foxwoods. And, I mean, this guy, you know, of course, was a true whale. I mean, I saw him sign for $650,000 in chips and he would lose it in 15 minutes, betting 25,000 a hand, sign for another 650, and then cash out $1.2 million ahead, ask for it in a paper bag, and as he's walking out of the high limit room, he reaches and grabs a bag of bananas out of the fruit basket, sticks it on top of the money, and walks to his room. So I mean, he was a real character. I mean, but you know, this kind of treatment is just like stuff you hear about. I mean, you get haircuts and massages in the room, you know, and limo on the tarmac, no check in, no check out. But it, you know, he was a little tough to be around. But it got to be where he grew to like me a lot, and he also noticed that I consistently won, and he more often than I lost. I mean, once again, variance considered. So he let me bet on his bankroll. And that sort of opened up a whole new world for me. The only problem was, of course, that you know you had to battle the Atlantic City game in kind of a play-all approach. So it really, really, really took a huge spread and a huge bankroll, which fortunately he had. The nice thing was, because he was such a big player, they did not countermeasure me at all. You know, for all the reasons that you talked about. They don't want to back off, you know, a friend of this whale. So we made several, you know, we split several big scores, you know, six-figure wins. And basically the deal was 50% for me, and if I lost, it was on him. And then, of course, he would adjust for the taxes, which was fine with me because I didn't want to have to contend with that anyway. But
so it ended up. If you lost, would you make it up on a subsequent trip?
Yeah, I actually took it upon myself to keep those records because I didn't want to lose his support. You know, it was the first time I'd been bankrolled, and I needed to show him a positive expectation. But ultimately, you know, his gambling nature really caused that relationship, the bankrolling, to go sour. Because, you know, even though he knew that there was a system in play here, you know, it was not unusual at all for him to say something like, "Doc, you know, you always got to hit that 16th. You know, or, you know, only suckers take insurance, you know, so it just,
yeah.
he never quite got it, you know, but it was quite an experience, and it was quite an experience.
I mean, this idea that he's adjusting for the taxes, I mean, he wouldn't owe any taxes because his net for the year is he's going to be minus, right, because he's a losing player, but still, you're still getting a hell of a deal.
Right, right. And I wasn't going to sweat it. Because once again, I had no risk in the game. You know, I mean,
right.
I wasn't going to sweat my cut of it because I had zero risk in the game. And plus, all the added, you know, EV from, you know, all this red carpet treatment was really very enjoyable. It's just, you know, he was quite a personality. And then I ran into him at a small private casino in the state here a few years ago, and the management was aware of our previous relationship and kind of wanted to know if I would sit with him when he played baccarat, because by this time he was over 90 years old and had become so cantankerous that they wanted me to serve sort of as his handler, you know, like call him Savage Beast. And he ended up passing away a couple years ago, but he was quite the character, and we had a lot of good memories. Well, So one of the things that cut into my EV a little bit was, I guess in the mines, they used to kill time. He started as a rank-and-file coal miner and just grew it. He took a loan for a $500 piece of mining equipment and just exploded it into an empire. But one of the things they used to do to pass the time was to pitch pennies closest to the wall in the coal mine, and they would bet on that. So we were waiting for a private plane one time, and he just said, "Doc, let's pitch pennies closest to the wall, $100 a pop." I'm like, "I don't want to do that. I don't have any skill in that." "Well, you're traveling with me. Come on, play with me. So I lost almost $5,000 waiting for a plane for 2 hours, pitching pennies with this guy. He's a tough guy to say no to.
Yeah. Wow. Is this the same guy? You mentioned the guy who would take all the liquor out of the minibar?
Oh, no. What he would do is he had a country store, okay, as a side business, and they sold, you know, produce and, you know, locally made products and woodworking and so forth. And what he would do is he would raid the suite for all the little mustards and Tabasco sauces and ketchups. And he would just, I mean, take hundreds of these little bottles. And I said, why are you doing that? And he said, oh, man, I sell these for a quarter a piece. They fly off the shelf.
That is amazing.
25,000 a hand, and every month he takes home a couple hundred dollars worth of mustard, and he thinks he's getting a good deal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's quite, like I say, quite a personality. Quite a personality.
Now, in your notes, you said one time he got angry at a gift from Trump Resorts. What was that all about?
Yeah, this is great. He ended up getting a watch from Trump Entertainment. It was a Rolex President with a diamond face. I'm guessing it was, at the time, a $25,000 watch. And he said, look at this thing. I don't want this thing. Because he wore a Timex. Like a lot of these guys, a lot of these big money guys, you know, they're not flashy. He had kind of the Warren Buffett attitude about money, I guess, except with his Baccarat play. But anyway, so the first thing he said was, he said, you know, I don't know what to do with this. And I said, well, I'll be happy to buy it from you. And he said, no, I guess I'll give it to my grandson. Then he came over really pissed because they had sent him a tax ticket on it. So he owed $8,900 in taxes on a gift that he never asked for.
And that irritated him.
What's that?
And that irritated him.
Oh, absolutely. And I offered to buy the watch for the cost of the tax ticket. I mean, it was a tremendously nice watch. And, I mean, you made a heck of a deal to get it for $8,900. He decided to give it to his grandson. But, anyway, that was his story on his.
You mentioned this. You mentioned playing in an underground casino where you live. And I'm curious about that. I mean, you never had any problems with the
It's actually the opposite of an underground casino. It's a private casino. Basically, so and private might not be the best term for it, but in my state, there's only two ways that casinos can operate. They either have to be tied to a racetrack, horse track or dog track, so like a racing, you know, or they have to be built in a historic hotel. And the hotel I'm referring to is a destination resort that presidents have stayed there. And they use that aspect of the state law to put a private casino on the premises. So it's private in that you have to be a hotel guest or a member or a property owner on the resort to play there. But it's on the up and up.
Oh. Huh.
So, Doc, we have bunches of more questions to ask you, and we're running out of time. Is there any chance we can talk you into sticking around, letting us tape another show to be aired next week?
I would be honored.
Thank you. That's the right answer. So, thank you, Doc. We're going to be hearing more about Doc, including his life as a sommelier, next week. Richard, thank you. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.